The Montreal Expos never went away.
The Expos take the field here at Olympic Stadium in Montreal, the second game of a four-game series.
Oh, the Expos left. They left Montreal. They became the Washington Nationals. They went off to play baseball in D.C. while Olympic Stadium, their former home, sat empty and decaying. The team's famous mascot, Youppi, even went to work for the Montreal Canadiens, because even furry orange monsters gotta eat. But the idea of the Expos, of a major league team in the heart of Montreal, a modern monument to a sport with deep history in the province, that never entirely vanished. There were always a few people, some of them loudly and most of them very quietly, keeping the fires burning. Mostly they were dreaming, but sometimes they were planning for the team's eventual return. And somehow that return might happen. The sport of baseball has changed. The city of Montreal has changed. The business of sport in general has changed. And unbelievably, as cities around North America celebrate baseball's opening day today, it is beginning to seem like the team that never really went away is suddenly very close to coming back. How did this happen? How real is it? What does baseball mean to Montreal, to Quebec, or to Canada? And will those fans, who refuse to abandon their team even after their team abandoned them, finally get their happy ending? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story. Jeff Blair is the host of The Jeff Blair Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. He is the co-host of The Lead podcast with Stephen Brunt. He knows a lot about baseball in Montreal because he covered the Expos for The Gazette for about a decade and for The Globe and Mail after that. So it's opening day today. Mm-hmm. There's no baseball in Montreal today.
Not yet.
But Montrealers are very excited this week. Why is that?
Well, I think they should be excited. I covered the Expos from 88 to 97 on a full-time basis, and I was there when the team ended up leaving town. As part of a franchise swap that saw the Expos go to Washington and saw the ownership of the Boston Red Sox and Miami Marlins change as part of the process. At that time, there was very little support from the local business community. There was a very small collection of minority partners who were in for maybe $1 million, $2 million a year. Very mm-hmm. small. They had been effectively bought out in a leveraged buyout by Jeffrey Loria, who was a New York art dealer who came in and saw that, I think at the end of the day, he ended up putting in about $25 million U.S. of his own money into that team, ended up buying it. And then when he sold the Marlins, it was for $1.3 billion. Anyhow, that's... But at that time, when the Expos left, the commissioner was committed at the time, Bud Selig, was committed to bringing baseball back to Washington. It was a legacy thing for him. The Expos, as I mentioned, had no local corporate support. There was no political support. I mean, they didn't have a political champion in the mayor's office. They had no political champions provincially. As a matter of fact, I think when you talk to people who were involved in sort of the post-Charles Bronfman era of the Expos, one of the things they'll say is that they were effectively screwed by a PQ government. There was no reason to keep the Expos in Montreal. There was a plan to build a new ballpark was completely stillborn. So there was absolutely no reason for the Expos to stay in town. And of course, attendance had decreased. Well, you fast forward now, you have a new commissioner, Rob Manfred, who also, even though he's only been in there for a few years, is thinking of his legacy. Mm-hmm. And his legacy is internationalizing the game. You've seen baseball games played in Japan. Baseball will play a game at Lourdes, the cricket ground this year, the Red Sox and the Yankees. And Rob Manfred has said that he thinks Montreal is a viable baseball market. He also thinks Mexico City's a viable baseball market. In Montreal itself, you have a really well-funded core ownership group. Stephen Bronfman of Claridge Investments, the son of Charles Bronfman, and Mitch Garber, who's kind of a fascinating guy. Mitch, when I first met him, he's a lawyer. His uncle was a lawyer who represented a lot of Expos players in and around Montreal, Tim Raines. He was kind of a fixer for them. And I mean that in a positive way. Mitch also hosted a radio show late night. I mean, he was a dabbler, really talented guy. he is now president of Caesars Acquisitions International. Essentially, he lives in Monaco, and he's on the French, the CBC French language version of Dragon's Den. He is a shaker and mover. He was, I believe, I don't know if he still is. He was CEO of Cirque du Soleil at one point. He's got a lot of money.
He's got a resume.
He's a billionaire. He and Stephen Bronfman both known each other for a while. They've kept the dream of baseball in Montreal alive. They've done it very quietly, as is their manner as people. They're both fairly quiet people. Very quietly, they had Denis Coderre when he was mayor of Montreal, who was a huge baseball fan. I mean, he's a nut, but he's a huge baseball fan. And he would show up at every baseball event, the All-Star Game, the World Series. He'd show up at the commissioner's office. He'd go to the Expos or the Blue Jays games every spring training just to kind of fly the flag.
And lobby for
a team to return to Montreal. And the provincial government, both the Liberal government and the new government, they're very comfortable with the idea of entertaining some sort of public-private partnership. So what we have now is a commissioner who views internationalizing the game as an important part of his legacy. We have people in Montreal with a ton of money. What we don't have is a team or a ballpark, obviously. We have Olympic Stadium. We don't have a team or a ballpark. Well, this is going on. The Tampa Bay Rays have been trying for 20, 25 years to get a ballpark built. They play at Tropicana Field in St. Pete. It's a horrible ballpark. You know, their attendance is routinely the worst in the league. Somewhat bizarrely, they have one of the best TV contracts in the league, but their attendance is generally pretty poor. They have been attempted to build a ballpark in different parts of Tampa. The problem in St. Pete right now is that Tampa is where the growth is in the area. East of Tampa, north of Tampa, that's where the growth is. Unfortunately, to get to St. Pete, you basically have a choice of two bridges. So during rush hour, access to St. Pete from Tampa is essentially the worst place you could imagine in the region,
right?
The ballpark. Last year, there seemed to be, finally, at least for the people in Tampa, there seemed to be momentum behind building a ballpark in Ybor City, which is to the eastern part of the city. It's an old warehouse area. And I hadn't been paying attention to it. At baseball's winter meetings this year, something happened. It collapsed. I don't know what. I don't know the exact reason,
sure.
But it just collapsed. So the winter meetings in baseball are where everybody in baseball gathers, media, general managers, owners. It's kind of like it's a swap shop. Trades are made sometimes. Free agents are talked about and all that. There was a news conference called by Stuart Sternberg, who's the owner of the Rays, and his president, which if you've got something you want to float, if you've got a trial balloon you want to float in baseball, you do it at the winter meetings because everybody who writes, talks, thinks about baseball is there.
Right.
They held a news conference, you know, blah, blah, blah. Stadium issue in Tampa. We still have a lease at Tropicana Field until 2027. Dot dot dot. But and this it was very subtle, and I probably wouldn't have noticed if I hadn't been tipped off about this by a Rays official. The Rays owner said, "Listen, we're not getting a park built in Tampa. We do have a lease right now until 2027 in St. Petersburg, prime real estate in terms of building condos, mixed." Business residential area. I mean, it is a gold mine for raising taxes.
But there's a crappy building sitting.
There's
on top
a crappy
of it.
Building sitting on it that we're going to be gone from in 10 years. And so what Stuart Sternberg did was he kind of flipped it a bit and said, "Here's the thing. Yeah, we could be here till 2027, but man, if you guys get an offer between now and then for this parcel of land, I mean, who knows what the economy's going to look like in 2027, right? I mean, it could be better, could be worse." So essentially, what he said is, "Hey, if you guys get a good offer for this, you know, I'd be willing to cut you a deal here to help you finish this off.
Please let me go.
Please let me go." So while that's going on, you know, the folks in Montreal, again, very quietly, very diligently, Claridge Investments is involved in purchasing land in the Griffintown part of Montreal, which is near the Peel Basin. It's kind of an area that's undergoing gentrification. So you've got that. Now you've got a Tampa Bay Rays owner who knows he's not going to stay there. Now you've got people with money in Montreal in a ballpark. You've got a commissioner who's committed to this. One of the things that's happened, though, as well is, in addition to all that sort of falling in place, one of the things Rob Manfred, the commissioner, said is, "Look, I realize the reality of the situation now is I'm not going to ask you to build a ballpark and then give you a team." And he cited Quebec City as an example, building an arena, no NHL team. He said, "Look, I'm not going to do that. I just need to see the plans. I don't even need the shovel in the ground. Show me the financing. Show me the plans. Have it nailed down, and we'll try to get a team in Montreal." Stuart Sternberg, who owns the Rays, lives in New York. So what's kind of happened in the past couple of months is people started to realize, well, who says Stuart Sternberg has to sell the Rays or Montreal has to get an expansion team. What if Stuart Sternberg said, I'm going to move the Rays to Montreal? I live in New York. It's not a big, not a long flight. Maybe I don't want to be a majority partner, but maybe I want 20%. Maybe Bell Media comes in for 20%. Stephen Bronfman and Mitch Garber have 30% each, and away we go. So all these things have kind of have fallen in place. If you'd asked me 4 years ago, I would have said there's no chance of baseball returning to Montreal in my lifetime. Now, I'd be stunned if there wasn't a major league team in Montreal within the next 6 or 7 years. 5 years might be a little tight, but just sort of planning this thing out a bit, I can see baseball back in Montreal in 6, 7 years at the outside. I'll be surprised if it isn't.
You've been there. You've covered it. What does baseball mean to Montreal? What's their relationship with the game?
Historically, and people in the rest of Canada don't necessarily understand this. I mean, baseball has deep roots in Canada. It's got deep roots in the Maritimes. It's got deep roots in the West. I mean, when the Negro Leagues went out of business in the United States, when Jackie Robinson broke the color barrier, that was a great thing, but it also put a lot of Negro League players out of business because there was no leagues left. A lot of them ended up playing in Winnipeg, Regina, Brandon. Baseball in Canada has been largely a rural game. That's where its roots are. And it's the same thing in Quebec. I mean, at one point, Quebec had minor league teams in Thetford Mines, Three Rivers.
Really?
People don't realize this.
It was...
The Montreal Expos were not the first baseball team in Montreal. Clearly, the Montreal Royals were there. But there was a real, in areas outside Montreal, there was a real, baseball has really, really deep roots. And, you know, I've got to think those have probably gone away a little bit as a result of the Expos leaving town. But there's still, I think, that underlying sense of, there's still enough people around who remember the Expos when they were really good, who remember the excitement. And Montreal, to me, Montreal's a great one-off city. It's a great event city. And I think if you could build a really sexy ballpark, and knowing the people involved in this, when the ballpark's built, it will be top-notch. If you can build that, and it's got great access to mass transit where they're thinking of putting it, there's going to be a subway line extension to that area, I think people in Montreal will come back. There are so many things lining up for this ownership group right now that the only way it gets screwed up is if somebody makes a misstep politically. And I don't think either of these guys will do it. Little known fact, Expos, TV, and radio ratings swamped Canadians' radio and TV ratings, even up to their last year in Montreal.
Absolutely.
It's a little known fact, but the ratings, especially French language broadcasts, were really strong. I just wanted to throw that out there.
That is surprising. I think counterintuitive. But yeah, I was just going to say that I spent a lot of time in Montreal growing up. I remember going to Expos games in the late 80s and early 90s when the stars were aligned and they were a great team. And the Big O was packed. It was very smoky, but it was packed. And I remember going there in the later part of the 90s when there was nobody there. I think we've all seen, anybody who follows baseball in this country, have kind of seen fans come out when the Blue Jays are there for a couple of games. How does that get sustained? How does the buzz not go away the way it did in the mid to late 90s?
I think the fact that the playing field for talent in baseball, and I don't mean to be cute there as a pun, the playing field has been sort of leveled out a little bit in baseball. Now, the game itself is going through a real profound economic shift in terms of how players are paid. It's a different time now. The Yankees and Red Sox don't get everybody. As salaries fall, and the percentage of revenue players get has decreased in recent years, as salaries kind of come in line, the door's been opened for almost every team. If especially with analytics now, the door's open for every team, any team that's smart, to build a winner very quickly. I mean, the Houston Astros were awful for a number of years. Now they may not be beaten for a long time. So it's a different game, the different revenue streams, again, not dependent on packing the place every night. I mean, you got to be an idiot to lose money in baseball right now. I mean, you effectively make money the second the game starts. And as I said, I mean, I think we're getting to a point where attendance will be the cherry on the top. You will make all the money you need as a baseball owner, and if you get 40,000 people at the ballpark, that's great. That's just added revenue. If you get 10,000 people at the ballpark, doesn't matter because you're still making all the money in the world.
Tell me about the group of Expos fans that never gave up hope.
Oh, God. I mean, I think I had to block about half of them. And Twitter because every time I'd write something even mildly negative, you know, I'd be swamped. There was a Warren Cromartie's kind of the godfather of this group. He was a much beloved Montreal Expos player. The Crow, as he's called, loved Montreal. He was up there. The Crow loved a lot about Montreal, shall mm-hmm. we say, not just the baseball. He's kind of, and he was a guy for the longest time who would keep talking up Montreal. It used to be a pain in the ass because you didn't want to go Crow. It's just not happening. Find something else to hit your wagon to. This mm-hmm. isn't going to work. But there's a core of baseball fans in Montreal. People like Jonah Carey, who some yeah. people will know. He does work for Sportsnet, The Athletic. He's a well-known podcaster.
Wrote
a book about the Expos, exactly. It's almost as if, and I was thinking about this the other day because a friend of mine, Marty Noble, covered the Mets, passed away. The highlights of his career were coming. Marty loved Montreal. That was the highlight of his career, was coming to Montreal. People around the game, writers, media, a lot of people who sort of create a lot of the churn around the game, they loved Montreal. There's a real romance attached to the Expos. And I think probably what kept things going was the romantic attachment people felt to that team, to the 94 team. Mm-hmm. Maybe the best team to never win a World Series because of the players' strike. There's kind of a lore, a legend, a myth, a romance around the Montreal Expos. It's almost like a ghost team. And people have always hung on to that. You know, you go to a game in any ballpark, you'll see folks in Expos jersey. I remember covering a World Series game, Detroit and San Francisco. In San Francisco, there were a row of guys wearing Expos jersey. I mean, it's just, it's almost like a diaspora. There are a lot of people who want baseball to return to Montreal, and a lot of them want it to return to Montreal because of that romantic attachment they have.
They seemed crazy for a long time.
Yeah. And you know, I think what happened too is the anger kind of drove them for a while because the Expos became the Washington Nationals. They were pretty good. You know, they're another team that was good enough to win a World Series. It just didn't work out for them.
Assuming they never come back, which now seems unlikely, mm-hmm. what's the indelible memory of baseball in Montreal?
Oh, for me, I mean, I wasn't there for the great teams of the 80s. So, I wasn't there when Rick Monday hit his home run. You know, most of my memories are kind of about the people, the players. I mean, Cliff Floyd, Rondell White, Dennis Martinez. I covered Dennis Martinez's perfect game at Dodger Stadium. That was pretty interesting. But, you know, my memory is that 94 team. And the Major League Baseball players went on strike. Actually, it's the 25th anniversary of the baseball strike this year.
It is.
August 11th or August 12th. I don't know the official date.
That's pretty good off the top of your head.
I remember August 11th, the last game the Expos played, they were in first place by a mile. Now, we can have a debate as to whether or not they would have won the World Series that year. The New York Yankees are pretty good. But the Expos, they had it all. They had a great closer. They had a great outfield. They had great starting pitching. I mean, they were the best team in baseball. I remember the game in Pittsburgh. It was going to be the final game before the players took a vote. It was like being in a morgue and having somebody, I don't know, have a garden party at a morgue almost. Because mm-hmm. it's baseball. Boy, the Expos are good. But there may not be, it may not matter in another week. It may not matter because the players will go on strike. And I remember that game, and I always remember that somebody had set up a platform in the Expos clubhouse after the game because the news was going to be, all right, this could be the last baseball game. And Ken Singleton, longtime broadcaster, covered the Expos. I remember, you know, we were down there after the game, and the players weren't, needless to say, weren't in a very good mood. They knew they had a great team. They knew that there was a chance the season was going to be over. And I remember Singleton looking at me and saying, you know what? The only time I've been in a room, in a dressing room, where there's been like a platform up there is when you're celebrating something. You know, you've won the pennant. You've won the World Series. People are pouring champagne. It's like you've set up a platform to basically talk about something that could be really, really bad. And I remember, and I took that flight back. I took the Expos charter back. I just remember the sense of, you know, God, this can't be over. We'd seen a couple of weeks earlier, Monday afternoon, the Atlanta Braves had always been the thorn in the Expos side. They played a game against the Expos on a Monday afternoon in Montreal. The place was jammed. Cliff Floyd hit a home run off of Greg Maddux. Just, you know, when Jose Bautista hit his home run in Toronto, did the bat flip, that was loud. That was almost as loud as Olympic Stadium was that day. I mean, that place shook. And at Olympic Stadium, that was scary because when Olympic Stadium shook, there was a 60% chance concrete was going to fall. So those are that's the remembrance I have of just how good that team was and just the sense of loss the next day when baseball went on strike. And then, of course, you start thinking, okay, when are they going to come back? And then a day leads to a week leads to month, and it never came back. But I remember that last game in Pittsburgh, and I remember sitting on the charter, and I also remember thinking, well, the book that I was going to write is pretty much died on the vine right now. And then the next year, of course, the Expos came back in spring training. They got rid of Marquise Grissom. Larry Walker left, traded Ken Hill.
And it was over?
It was over, you know. And I remember sitting in Felipe Alou's office to manage the Expos spring training. After the day when the baseball players came back, the strike was settled and everybody was gone, he looked at me and said, well, every team in baseball wants a leadoff hitter, wants an ace pitcher, wants a stud closer, wants a cleanup hitter who can hit 40 home runs. We just gave them all away. And I remember thinking at that point, yeah, that's, you just did. You gave away the four most important parts of every baseball team. And the Expos lost it within a matter of 48 hours.
I've never heard a story that needed closure more than that,
that
one.
That needs closure for sure. It does.
If they, or I guess I should say when they come back, there's no way they call them anything but the Expos, right?
I would be stunned if they didn't call them the Expos. I would be stunned. I just can't see it. Again, that's part of the romance of the thing, right? And yeah, boy, oh boy, don't even throw that out there. I hadn't thought of that. Don't even throw that out there because I don't want anybody to start thinking about that as a possibility. How dare you?
They won't do it.
No, they won't.
Thanks, Jeff.
Thanks, Jordan. Appreciate it.
Jeff Blair, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, also the co-host of The Lead, a podcast about sports and culture with Stephen Brunt. You should check that out. That was The Big Story. For more from us, you can find us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. We talked to Stephen Brunt about what's wrong with baseball last year, one of our first episodes. Consider this one the sequel. And you can find us at frequencypodcastnetwork.com. All of our shows are there. We've got Moms in the Middle working hard now. They're coming back for season two a few weeks from now. And of course, you can find us on social media. Hit us up at TheBigStoryFPN on Twitter. Or find our whole network at Frequency Pods on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And don't forget, if you like anything you have heard, go to wherever you get your podcasts. That's Apple, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, iCatcher. Wherever it is, leave us a rating. Leave us a review. We can use the help and we want to know what you think. Thanks for listening. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. We'll talk tomorrow.